Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to violence.
Welcome to Lost in the Static.
Welcome to Lost in the Static. First things first.
Or the new title of the show, Adam and Eve Presents Lost in the Static. No, we're never going to get to that point.
No,
shut up,
people.
We're not.
We're not. God, I hope we never do. But yeah, speaking of Adam and Eve, go to adamandeve.com at the very end. Use the code STATIC, STATIC.
Correct.
You get 50% off one item, free shipping in the U.S., 3 free DVDs, and a free mystery gift. And we get a little cut of whatever you spend.
The more you spend, the more you help us out, and you get all the free items anyway.
That's
so
right.
There you go. AdamandEve.com.
Yay.
All right. I wanted to talk to you about first-run syndication and what it used to mean, the problems inherent in it, and the problem that the modern generation has understanding what first-run syndication was.
Let me make sure that I understand what the basics of first-run syndication is. This is a show that is made that is not attached to a given network.
More or less, yes. Okay. It's a little more complex than that, but more or less, yes.
Okay.
Because there are two types of syndication. There's off-network syndication, which is reruns of, you know, Knight Rider after it's done with its NBC run. They'll sell it into what's called being stripped.
Okay.
Five nights a week, you know, at 5 p.m. or whatever it is on your local station.
Simpsons.
The Simpsons when they're not on Fox.
Yeah, yeah, they were attached to Fox for years. And then when you started seeing reruns on things like the CW or the WB or something, that's regular syndication.
Yeah, so that's called off-network syndication.
Okay.
First-run syndication was when you bypassed the networks completely. You know, and you got to remember this started in the days when Fox didn't exist. So you had NBC, CBS, ABC, and PBS.
Right.
And even the cable nets were not doing original programming at this point. So you'd have a show such as The Next Step Beyond in 1978, the sequel to the 50s, One Step Beyond.
Okay.
No network wanted it. All the networks turned it down. So they said, but there are all these independent stations that need programming. All they're doing is showing old movies and showing reruns of Hawaii Five-O episodes. We'll just sell it directly to the stations. So it's first run. It's not on a network first. It's on your local affiliate, your local, you know, channel 26, your local channel 32, whatever that is. That's first run syndication. And that was always an option. There was always first run syndicated shows. You had game shows, Wheel of Fortune, Family Feud, things like that were always first run syndicated. You had first run syndicated news programming. You had news that was obviously not local. It was all just nationwide news. You had shows like Next Step Beyond and things like that. And the reason I'm bringing this all up is Mental Floss just had the 25 most groundbreaking TV shows of all time. And they listed Star Trek The Next Generation in 87 being one. And I was just like, what? You know, we've discussed it before. I like Star Trek The Next Generation, but I'd hardly call it groundbreaking, wouldn't you?
I don't know. I mean, it really did thrust sci-fi and it thrusted Star Trek back into the public eye.
It did that, but going on to read their entry on it, they were basically saying that kicked off the first-run syndication boom of the late 80s, which led into the boom of the mid-90s, and I had to disagree with that. I partially disagree with that. I'm not saying that they didn't have a huge role to play in the boom of the late 80s, okay?
Okay.
But I think Mental Floss was giving them way too much credit. Because look at things like Tales from the Dark Side. When that aired, Halloween weekend of 1983, the pilot of Tales from the Dark Side, it only aired in 30% of the country, okay? And it beat all of its network competition. That was the first bastion of, holy shit, this syndication thing can really work.
Yeah, but I don't remember Tales from the Dark Side all that well. I mean, I watched it hardcore. I understand, but I remember the show. I remember that beautiful, beautiful intro that they did, and I, you know,
the man lives in the sunlit world of what he believes to be reality, but unseen by most, there lies a dark side.
Yes.
The Don LaFontaine type narrator's much better than me, but
yes, he is.
Shut up.
But the
shut up, you.
But that. But again, I remember it as it happened. It was neat. You know, it had some pretty cheesy stories and some really good stories.
But it
stories,
was also something that had never happened before. Never in the history of television had a syndicated program even come close to its network competition, let alone besting it. And then throw in the fact that it only aired in 30% of the country, and it still had ratings higher than its nationwide competition. Me. That showed there's a market. There's a market for this. And that was a full 4 years before Star Trek Next Generation came on the market.
But I don't think, and I while I'll agree, and the numbers are there to kind of back it up, maybe, but I don't think that it had the cultural impact. At the time, maybe networking programming just plain sucked, and this was something new that people wanted to see. Maybe it was there, but I don't think Tales from the Dark Side had the cultural impact that TNG had, and I think that's where Mental Floss got it right.
But I like I said, I'm not bitching that that Next Generation did not play a huge role. I think Mental Floss was just giving them too large of a role. I think they were giving them all the credit. For instance, if Dark Side had not paved the way for Next Generation, they would have never even attempted that. I mean, Paramount even admits that in the Guide to Science Fiction and Horror, this really great book that was written in the mid-90s. You know, he's got interviews with all these people, and they said they saw what Laurel Productions did with Dark Side. That's what showed them that there's a market for this. It's kind of the same thing with He-Man. All the things that came after wouldn't have happened if He-Man hadn't plowed the road for them. So for Mental Floss to go, Star Trek did all this, Dark Side? What is Tales from the Dark Side?
But I think the difference between where you're seeing it and where I'm seeing it is, I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm not disagreeing that Tales from the Dark Side had a really big impact. And just like any pioneer has that initial impact. But I think that the show that has the most ability to change, or the thing, whatever it is, that has the most ability to change the world, is the one that gets into the culture. And I think Tales from the Dark Side, very good, very fun, fondly remembered little show. But it when it comes to cultural impact versus Star Trek TNG, I think Star Trek wins.
And you're probably right. Maybe I was mad at the fact that Star Trek was given all the credit, and Dark Side was just like they'd never even heard of that.
Well, it's like a lot of people saying that Coca-Cola invented the soft drink. No, they certainly didn't. There were
sarsaparilla.
There were root beer stuff that's been around for a long, long time that were soft drinks prior to Coca-Cola, but a lot of people, you know, I'll take a Coke. We have Pepsi. Same thing.
No, it's not. But
I know, but, you know.
Well, because I want to talk to you about first-run syndication. Now, I know you were out of the country for a lot of the 80s stuff.
Yes.
So that's why I think you're the perfect person to talk about rather than Jillian or Brad, because they grew up watching the same shows I did.
Okay.
You might have seen these later. But one of the great things about what Star Trek The Next Generation did was it showed that there was a market for these, that you didn't have to be picked up by NBC, CBS, or ABC. And just on a side note, isn't it funny that all three of those networks turned down Star Trek The Next Generation and said, we don't think people want Star Trek anymore? And then Paramount said, well, we don't care. We're going ahead anyway.
Yeah, and thank you, Paramount. But
I just think it's kind of funny that, you know, whenever you see a huge hit, 9 times out of 10, it's not on the network it was pitched to. The Shield was pitched to Fox. Sopranos was pitched to Fox. Sledgehammer, remember that great ABC comedy from the 80s? That was pitched to HBO. The Dead Zone was pitched to UPN. It's just funny when you always have these rating smashes. ABC turned down Monk. You know, that I just find it funny. And then they go to cable and then they just become giant hits. Yeah. And you kind of go, man, some executives got to get punched in the nuts for passing on that.
Well,
you know,
do you know why Fox turned down all those great shows?
Because, well, like The Sopranos and The Shield wouldn't have worked on Fox.
Because they couldn't cancel them after one season.
And can you imagine The Sopranos or Vic Mackey operating on Fox broadcast standards?
Yeah, no, I can't. I would love to see Firefly operating on HBO broadcast standards.
I don't think they'd need to be on HBO. I want to see a Judge Dredd TV series on HBO. That would be awesome. Yeah. Shut up.
Okay.
But so first run syndication after Star Trek The Next Generation, there was this boom where, because you got to remember, with the three networks, and then by 87, when Star Trek came about, you had Fox, which was hardly considered a real network at that point. You got to remember, they weren't even a real network until the 90s. Because, I mean, hell, they only had 5 nights a week of 2 hours a night
right,
programming.
Right.
So they were basically a package that independent stations carried that was called Fox.
Yeah, they were a prime time network, basically.
More or less, yeah. And so your local stations, because most markets had at least 5 stations, so you basically had four networks if you count Fox, and
right,
then you had that other indie that was boobering around.
Or even prior to Fox, you had the four, you know, and if you include the PBS network.
Well, right.
And then, yeah.
And then, so they needed programming. So the first run syndication boom with Star Trek The Next Generation said, we can give you programming to counter Knight Rider, to counter the A-Team.
Sure.
That we can give you something that people are going to watch that you can put on at 7 p.m. and it's something brand new. It's not a rerun of something that they've seen before.
Right.
And these things got huge ratings. You had Paramount quickly cranked out War of the Worlds, the series, which lasted for 2 seasons. Friday the 13th, the series, which lasted for 3 seasons and would have lasted more if not for all the controversy surrounding mm-hmm, that, mm-hmm, because that actually went out on top. Its third season, when it was canceled, was its highest rated season. Hmm. It was actually rivaling that of Next Generation for ratings. And it didn't have the expensive budget Next Gen had. So technically, it was a bigger moneymaker for Paramount when you really get down to it.
Right.
But see, the problem with Friday the 13th was it was way too controversial. Way too controversial. Yeah. Have you ever seen the Friday the 13th, the series?
I know I've caught it. It would have been aired on WXIN in Indianapolis, I believe.
Here in Green Bay, it was on WLUK Channel 11, the Fox affiliate.
But as I remember, it was a late night program.
Yes, it was a late night program, and that's what it was recommended for.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, some stations said this thing's getting great ratings at midnight.
Let's put it on
at 7 p.m. Yeah. And the show is way too violent.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It didn't really deal with sex all that much, but it dealt with rough topics. And the episode that actually got it canceled was the 6th episode of season 3, Hate on the Radio. Because the premise of the series is Louis Vendredi owned an antique store named To Deal with the Devil to Live Forever, and the devil would curse all the antiques in there to spread the curse out.
Okay.
And so he sold them. He got a bout of conscience, tried to get the artifacts back. The devil took him to hell, and then his relatives took over, and they're running a real antique store while seeking out all the antiques that he sold from his ledger.
Okay.
Kind of a neat premise, which gives you an almost anthology kind of show with recurring characters.
Kind of Warehouse 13-ish.
Warehouse 13 owes a lot to... Some people were calling that Friday the 13th the series for sci-fi
when
that premiered.
Okay.
And in the third season, they had an episode called Hate on the Radio, where somebody had bought a cursed, you know, old 50s style radio.
Like an old Crosley radio or
right,
something like that.
And sure, the guy was a Klan member. And it allowed him to travel back in time. His dad had killed a black activist in the 50s and went to jail for it, and it ruined this kid's life. So now he can go back and still kill the black activist but save his dad from going to jail, allowing the other him to live a normal life. So you had this episode devoted to the Klan and the and saying nigger a lot
okay.
in a first-run syndicated show. Way too controversial. And there was already all the hoopla about how much violence was on the show, and Paramount just said, we're sick of the complaints. We're canceling the show. We're done with the complaints.
Okay.
And you could tell that they did not want to cancel it. They even had... There was a season called or a episode called Demon Hunter in season 3. Clearly a backdoor pilot for a spinoff.
Really?
Our characters barely appeared in it. A family of the word just fell out of my head, but like, you know, Soldier of Fortune kind of people, you know, and all the people, and they're hunting a demon.
Paranormal mercenaries, basically.
Yeah, and they eventually run afoul of the demon. It's got nothing to do with a cursed antique or anything, and they run afoul of the characters. And it was clearly a backdoor pilot to make these new characters into a spinoff. And you find out that's what Paramount had planned. And then they just canceled it and this is too controversial. We're sick of dealing with affiliates complaining about how violent the series is.
Ah.
Then you had ones like War of the Worlds, the series. Insanely gory. You would not believe the level of gore that they put in a TV show in 1988.
I do remember that. And yes, I do remember the gore.
Because when one of the aliens took over your body, they emitted a radiation, which... humans couldn't stand, so it would like eat through the body and like the skin would melt off and stuff, mm-hmm. and they could only be in the body for a few hours before they started to like have lesions and all this, and whenever you killed an alien it just melted into a puddle of glop and organs.
Ew.
So the show was gory as shit.
Right. I something I always remember from that show was the infamous hand coming over the earth barrel. Yeah.
Which,
well, not just the big one coming over the earth, which was their logo kind of thing. But I, for some reason, I remember an alien hand creeping its way out of a barrel, as in, I've gotten over my cold, now I can kill you.
Yeah. And see, the big problem with War of the Worlds, the series, was both seasons are pretty good, but they don't connect at all.
Really?
Season 1 took place in then contemporary 1988,
mm-hmm.
and it was about a secretive group of military and scientists that know that the Martians are still here, that you know some of them never left, they just went into hibernation, and the advocacy, that's what the Martians were called, was trying to reestablish links with their homeworld.
Okay.
Not bad. Season 2 decided, fuck that. Frank Mancuso Jr. took over as head of Paramount. And he wanted something a little more action-oriented. So, with no explanation given between seasons, it jumped into a Blade Runner-style future called Almost Tomorrow. Almost all new characters, and the three characters from season 1 that moved into season 2, were the only ones. Every other season 1 character was killed off in the season 2 premiere in an almost cast-wide bloodbath.
Wow.
And just no explanation, you jumped from 1988... to Almost Tomorrow and it's Blade Runner, which was not cheap, by the way.
This was not
a cheap show to produce. And so the two seasons don't link up whatsoever. And the biggest thing that alienated fans was the season 1 premiere finale was completely ignored. It ended on a massive cliffhanger that season 2 never addressed once.
Ugh.
Because the aliens, that they're not called Martians or anything. They're just called the Advocacy.
Mm-hmm.
And another alien comes down. Called I think it's Quattro, as I think what she called herself.
Okay.
And she helps them and defeat the Advocacy and whatnot. And then at the end, she starts talking into her wrist to her home planet. And she says, the humans will make a fine food supply once the Advocacy is out of the way. And that's how season 1 ended. Never mentioned again in season 2.
Okay.
The whole Quattro race and you know, them, you know, like a third alien or a second alien race and a third combatant in this war, never brought up again. Hmm. So that really pissed fans off hardcore.
Understandable.
But then you also had probably the most controversial first run syndicated show ever, Freddy's Nightmares.
Yes, I remember that one as well.
That was specifically billed as a late night show. It was sold to the networks as a, in their words, after midnight series because of the high doses of sex, the high doses of nudity. I mean, basically, it had nudity that was just shy of showing nipples.
Okay.
And you know, they had ass cracks, side boobs, stuff like that. For 1988, really racy for TV.
Sure.
And but some networks said, well, Freddy, you know, this was the height of Freddy Krueger's popularity.
Sure.
They were putting it on it during dinner.
That's bad.
In the Bible Belt.
That's really bad.
And here was the problem. After a dozen episodes, no one wanted Freddy's Nightmares. Even the affiliates wanted out. Here was the brilliant thing New Line did. Two seasons guaranteed. You bought 44 episodes. You're getting all 44. Whether you want to air them or not, that's your problem.
Ah.
But you're getting 44, and you know you're paying us for them because that's the agreement you signed.
Okay.
So it was a guaranteed 44-episode, two-season commitment, and after about a dozen episodes, most affiliates wanted out because of the controversy surrounding Freddy's Nightmares.
Hmm.
So you had that for first-run syndication. And then there was also another weird side effect of first-run syndication. Shows that networks canceled, but the producers wanted to continue. There's quite a few shows that people don't realize their last couple of seasons weren't on their network. They were syndicated.
Okay, like?
21 Jump Street. Seasons 1 through 4 on Fox. Season 5, first-run syndication.
Hmm.
And, you know, obviously much lower budgets. Oh. Almost all new casts. Mm-hmm. With the exception of Stephen Williams and Amanda Peet, none of the cast members, well, Peter DeLuise did for the first four or five episodes, but he said the only way I'll come back for a few is if I get to direct them too. Mm. So for a chance to direct, I'll be on the show. And Punky Brewster, its last two seasons were first-run syndication. NBC only carried that for 3 years.
Really?
The last two seasons, once she was a teenager, those were first-run syndicated.
Okay.
You had quite a few shows like that where you go, huh, I didn't know the last couple of seasons were first-run. And some shows would rather be canceled than go first run because first run syndication had this stigma to it. You know, you're not good enough for a network. Like Night Court. Night Court's final season was not supposed to be its final season. It was supposed to be its final NBC season. And the producers were going to carry it one more season into first run syndication. And the whole cast said, I'd rather not be on the show then. If it's not going to be on NBC, I don't even want to be on it.
Oh, okay.
Kind of snobbish in a way.
See, I since I was not around during that era, you know, the TV that I remember. Well,
we're going to get to the 90s when you will have a lot to say, because yeah. I know you watched those.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, coming back, I fondly remember the post-TNG first-run syndication boom. Because, and I do kind of remember a few shows in the 80s where you would go through that whole cast switch and you were like, wow, this isn't
and a show. And that was usually the jump from network to first run syndication. Yeah.
And
you didn't notice it at the time, especially if you're watching them on DVD or something now. You just noticed they got all the name cast members stopped showing up. What happened?
Yeah.
Or you get as bad as the Airwolf situation.
What was the Airwolf situation?
Three seasons on CBS, and then they dropped it. Then USA Network, which was still an up-and-comer at that point,
right,
picked it up for two more seasons. But they couldn't afford Jan Michael Vincent or Ernest Borgnine or any of the, you know, name cast members, so they were all killed off from behind with stand-ins in the first USA episode. So a whole new cast came in, and they couldn't even afford... You remember Airwolf? It was a show about a helicopter, right?
Yeah, it was. I mean, you know, Ernest Borgnine was kind of comic relief, and you had Jan Michael Vincent, which was the typical pilot. Yeah, the typical manly pilot action hero.
Uh-huh.
But the show, much like Knight Rider, yeah, you had Michael Knight, but my God,
it was about the car.
You had Airwolf that, yeah, you had these people, but it was about the helicopter and the cool shit it could do.
Well, USA couldn't afford the helicopter. Every single helicopter shot in those USA seasons are stock footage from the first three seasons.
Really?
Yes. There was not a single new helicopter shot made for the USA seasons because they couldn't afford it.
Wow.
And the USA seasons even started to write the helicopter out It just kind of became like a spy show.
Okay, yeah, that's the end of Airwolf when, you know, that would be like Knight Rider with no kit.
Yeah, Knight Rider. You liked Michael Knight, right? He's now, you know, a lifeguard. Oh, wait,
course,
that happened.
Yeah, I was going to say, of course, they did Knight Rider with no kit. I think believe it was called Team Knight Rider or Knight Rider 2000.
No, Knight Rider 2000 was a direct sequel to Knight Rider.
Okay.
Team Knight Rider was actually no kit, but you had a kit motorcycle, a kit helicopter, a kit car. Yeah, that was a team of kits.
It was Voltron.
You know what the worst part of that is?
What?
It's connected to Star Trek.
Really?
Knight Rider takes place in Star Trek continuity.
Really?
I'm not joking. Go watch the classic Trek episode, Is There No Truth in Beauty?
Okay.
They name drop a scientist whose name fell out of my head. Well, that's the writer who wrote that episode also wrote an early Team Knight Rider episode.
Oh, wow.
The same scientist is in it, and they by name have him inventing the thing that Star Trek said he was famous for.
Wow.
The same writer specifically linked Team Knight Rider to classic Star Trek. So Knight Rider and Star Trek take place in the same continuity, technically.
Do you ever catch...
Creepy as shit, huh?
Yeah. Odd. Very
You're
odd.
Never going to be able to just watch Kid again without going, James Kirk will show up at some point in the future.
Yeah. What was the... Wasn't there a recent remake or a reboot of Knight Rider that they tried?
Yeah, NBC tried it a couple of years ago and
yeah.
6-7 episodes and it was gone.
It was you know why? Because it was awful. And you had things like the car
Val Kilmer voiced Kit. What did you want?
Yeah. Well, you also had things like the car being able to transform into...
I never saw a single episode of the new one.
The car could transform into other cars, basically. But if you could imagine...
We're a Corvette and now we're a Geo.
No, it was worse than that. It went from like a little Mustang to a big old Dodge truck.
Where's it getting all the extra metal?
Yeah, that's one thing that everybody kind of looked at and went, we're not dumb enough to fall for this anymore.
In the 80s was one thing. We were all on coke and cocaine accessories. So.
Exactly. All the smart people were too busy making a lot of money in high finance.
But you were going to ask me, you said, do I? And then you went on to another.
I don't know.
You kind of brain farted yourself.
Yeah,
there.
I did.
But you had that kind of first run syndication and Team Knight Rider that was syndicated. That was first run syndication.
Well, I kind of remember some pretty low budget pretty low budget TV series in first run syndication that didn't last very long, or at least they didn't last long in my brain.
Well,
but things like Nightman
lasted 2 seasons, so that's not too bad nowadays.
Okay, but I guess I never caught it was one thing.
The great thing about Nightman?
Yeah.
It has 2 episodes that are worth watching.
Only 2?
Only 2 that I care about, because I didn't like Nightman himself.
Okay, why is that?
You remember that old Glenn Larson show, Automan, that Tron ripoff-y one?
Yeah.
Automan appeared in an episode.
Huh.
And so did Manimal.
Really?
They brought Manimal back. He somehow figured out time travel, and his daughter can change now too. And it was Simon McCorkendale coming back as Manimal, and Jack the Ripper had found a time portal, and Manimal and Nightman and Manimal's daughter were chasing Jack the Ripper through time periods. I'm not kidding. You if nothing else, you don't ever have to seen a Nightman before. You've got to get the Manimal crossover.
I may have to look at that. By the way, what do you think of the Manimal movie that they're making? Obviously, not without the leads. I don't know.
McCorkendale's dead, so
That's why I said obviously without McCorkendale. I don't know how you can make Manimal without McCorkendale, but...
Well, let's not talk about that, because I have nothing positive to say.
All of the animals are CG, I know that much.
But then, you know, you had other big hits that people... Everybody nowadays, it's almost a meme online about Small Wonder being one of the worst TV shows ever.
Right.
That was a first-run syndicated show.
Was it
not a network program.
Really?
Small Wonder was first-run syndication. So if you watched Small Wonder in like 89, 90, whenever it was, you watched it on some, you know, local affiliate. You did not watch it on a network.
I could have sworn I watched that.
Small Wonder was first-run syndication. Okay. See, comedy used to have a big... They used to have a lot of first-run syndicated comedies in the late 80s and early 90s.
Well, there was a whole comedy boom from stand-up to skit shows to everything back then.
Well, I'm just talking like sitcoms and stuff. Yeah. Like Most people don't realize that WKRP came back in 1988 and 1989 with the new WKRP in Cincinnati, which was quite a decent show in and of itself.
I don't think I ever saw it.
It was quite good, actually. And that came back. You had Small Wonder. You had, do you remember The Munsters Today?
Yes.
From 88?
Yes.
I liked that. I remember, and clearly that made an impact because it lasted three fucking seasons. So clearly that thing made enough money and had good enough ratings that they kept ordering it.
See, I think I think here's the difference, that getting back to your mental floss deal.
Okay.
How many seasons did TNG have?
Seven.
Seven? Okay.
All Star Trek shows except Enterprise have had seven. Well, and not counting Classic, which was three, but you know what I mean. Well, right. Technically with the animated, it had seven. So
the animated.
But yeah, the TNG, DS9, Voyager all had seven.
Right. We remember those shows. They had obviously a big impact on us. Munsters, three seasons. I don't think I would have.
The original Munsters only lasted three seasons.
Not the original Munsters.
I know, but you know, the remake lasted as much as the original.
But again, here's the difference. That's the difference between cultural impact and actual impact, and we'll say manipular or numerical impact. I mean, the original Munsters, huge cultural thing. Caught it in reruns. It's been around. We all know Herman Munster. We all see him on Car 54, Where Are You? And
as the judge in My Cousin Vinny.
Yeah, and the judge in My Cousin Vinny and a few other bit parts here and there, and God rest his soul. Fred Gwynn. From what I heard, also a really, really nice guy.
I've never heard anything bad about Fred Gwynn.
Never. He, like the Tom Hanks of his day. But the new Munsters or the Munsters, what was it?
The Munsters Today.
The Munsters Today, no cultural impact whatsoever. Obviously a manipular impact and a numerical impact because it lasted three seasons.
See, but nothing. The one thing I did like about The Munsters Today is it wasn't a remake or a reboot.
Okay.
It was the same characters, obviously all different actors. The characters end up getting frozen in their basement and they get woke up when somebody's trying to tear their house down in 1988. So it's the same characters, and you've got the fish out of water that they still think it's the 60s.
Okay.
I kind of liked that. It was better than just, hey, we're remaking The Munsters, like this new NBC disaster that just looks fucking horrendous.
Which one? Because NBC is well known for their disasters.
The new Munsters that they've... Oh, sorry. Mockingbird Lane, it's called. Looks fucking horrendous. I'll show you the trailer when we're
really?
Done.
I've not even heard of this.
Eddie Izzard is Grandpa, and now he's a murderous thug.
Okay, I'll have to check it out because it's got Eddie Izzard, and I like Eddie Izzard.
Jerry O'Connell is Herman.
What?
Yeah.
The dude from Joe's Apartment?
Yeah, he's Herman.
And Sliders?
Yeah. And Eddie Izzard is... And see, like, okay, in The Munsters and The Munsters Today, Grandpa was this goofy scientist, yeah. You know, kind of, you know, loses his head now and then, and he's a vampire. In this... Eddie Izzard's outright a murderous thug. I mean, like, there's a scene in the trailer where he's naked, a bunch of rats form into his body, and Marilyn comes out and puts a robe around him, and she goes, what are the neighbors going to think? He licks his lips and goes, they should be more concerned about what I'm thinking about them. And then, like, you know, the mailman comes, and Eddie Munster goes, my grandpa's going to kill you and eat you.
Wow.
And it's like, wow, so... They're all murderous thugs now? What the fuck? That's not The Munsters.
Yeah. I think that one...
You're just lost for words, aren't
you? Yeah, it's just... talk about completely missing the spirit of the show. Yeah, it's Halloween-ish. It's a little after Halloween, I know.
Yeah.
But it's fall, and so my brain is always there. And that was one of the fun things about Halloween was the monster-type monsters that were just kind of fun and out of place. And, you know,
And now he's talking about murdering his neighbors.
Yeah, you know, it was... Now I'm thinking of Being Human, which is basically a dramatic version of the Munsters as opposed to the comedic version, you know, so...
But then you had the era that I know you're familiar with, that was kicked off arguably by Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Okay.
Again, Star Trek did it. But when DS9 premiered in 93, monster ratings.
Oh yeah.
And then you had followed Babylon 5 and Hercules, the Legendary Journeys, and Xena, and you know, you had the 80s shows winding down. Next Generation was coming to an end.
Right.
Monsters was coming to an end. Dark Side had already come to an end.
Yep.
Freddy's Nightmares and all and Friday the 13th had come to an end. You had the second season of Forever Night had just come to an end when that moved to USA for its third season. And then all of a sudden, Deep Space Nine came and blew everything up. You had Tech War, Time Tracks, Hercules, Xena. You had Jack of All Trades, Cleopatra, all the Renaissance 2025
stuff. Yeah,
all the Sam Raimi produced stuff. So then all of a sudden, another first run syndicated boom was ushered in.
Buffy
was on UPN.
Was it attached to the network or was it?
Buffy was a UPN show.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Or is it? It was on both. It was either I can't remember if it started on UPN and then moved to it started on UPN and then moved to WB. Okay. So it was a UPN show.
Okay.
But that's the era you know. So what are your remembrances of that first run syndicated era?
Fun. And there was something in those Renaissance Pictures deals that I think is missing today. And that was fun.
Horrid CGI?
Well, you know, horrid CGI, plenty of camp, but they were clearly having fun. And I think, you know, the closest that you see to something like that would be Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog. Well, yeah, stop with the growling. Grow up.
No. Well, did you ever see the one that never got made into a series? It was just a 2-hour pilot that they were trying at that era, The Adventures of Captain Zoom in Outer Space?
Nope.
Really good.
Okay.
It would have made would have made a really fun series.
I'll have to look that one up.
It's basically, there's a Hercules-type world, but it's kind of a Flash Gordon-y world. You got laser guns and everything, too. Ron Perlman's the Ming the Merciless-type villain, and his psychic sidekick as the villain can only see things when she's sexually frustrated. So she's always trying to get on with somebody and he won't let her. And so they have this legend of the savior that will come to them, and they get him from 1950s Earth because they think the old Captain Zoom TV series is a real thing. So they kidnap him to their planet and he's just like a stupid actor.
So it's almost like, what was the movie with,
My Name is Bruce with Bruce Campbell?
No. Where they get the actors from the Alien TV show to come save their...
Galaxy Quest.
Thank you.
But this was done before Galaxy Quest.
Okay.
And it was really fun. It was done with those garish colors, that weird pulp kind of adventure style. And it was called The Adventures of Captain Zoom in Outer Space. It was a 2-hour pilot. Their syndicator passed on them.
That's a shame.
And so they just aired it as a TV movie. But Adventures of Captain Zoom in Outer Space is really fun.
I'll have to
give you a copy of that one. I've got that on tape. For whatever reason, Stars used to show that now and then.
Really?
The Stars channel would show that as a movie now and then. And you got Liz Vassy and Ron Perlman think about this. Ron Perlman basically playing Ming the Merciless.
It fits.
How's that not awesome?
It fits.
Exactly. And then you had the other ones that are not as well remembered, like Tech War, Time Tracks, Kung Fu, The Legend Continues. A lot of people don't even remember that Kung Fu had a sequel series.
I barely remember the Kung Fu one. I remember the intro more than anything because the intro was almost a nod to the original Kung Fu intro.
Well, because as the title would imply, The Legend Continues.
Right.
While obviously David Carradine's not playing the same character, he is still playing Qui-Chang Kane, the descendant of the same character, which also allowed in a brilliant move flashbacks to the era of the original Kung Fu.
Right.
So the real Qui-Chang Kane still appeared on the show on a semi-regular basis in flashbacks. That was pretty cool of them to do that. But there was that, and then Babylon 5, of course, huge in first-run syndication.
I do remember Tech War. I don't remember much about Tech War, but I remember it being terrible.
The series was. The four TV movies were not. Because that actually didn't start off as a series. That started off as 4 2-hour TV movies. And then those were so popular, it kicked off a 1-hour series.
And
the
those...
4 TV movies are pretty good, actually.
So which came first, the movies or the books?
The books.
Okay, because the books aren't too bad. They're
Shatner did not write them.
I know. They're pulpy and they're kind of fun and kind of out there and not real serious, but
that's the way the TV movies
right.
Were. Yeah, that's the way the movies. And the real sick thing about Tech War, only the TV series is on DVD. The four TV movies are not. You can only find those on VHS.
Dang.
So that's insulting that the basically 8-hour, you know, early season is not there. Is what it comes down to. And then do you remember Time Tracks? That was another first run syndicated one. It was basically the Jean-Claude Van Damme movie Time Cop, but it was like basically a ripoff of that. Like some evil villain gets a hold of a time machine, so a time cop is following him to all these different time periods, trying to stop him from fucking up history.
I kind of remember that one.
So it's basically Time Cop the series without being Time Cop. And
I was going to say the only one that I remember like that was actually
the Time Cop series?
No, not the Time Cop series. It was what was it called? Voyagers?
Oh, from the 80s.
Yeah, from the 80s.
John Eric Hexum, he ended up blowing his brains out with a prop gun screwing around on set.
Oops.
Yeah, he didn't realize that a gun with blanks still has a pressurized wad inside, and he put it up to his head and boom! Yep. Right on set, goofing around with the teen star of the movie.
Oops.
Yeah, oops. Just real blow to your ego. See what I did there? It was really bad. Never mind. But now, me personally, I gave Hercules a chance when it premiered. So there was no backlash or hating its popularity. I watched the pilot and the first three episodes and went, this isn't for me. I don't like this. And then as the show got more and more popular, I really started to go, I don't get what people are saying. The show got worse as it progressed. How did it get more popular?
It didn't take itself seriously. That's the reason I like those Renaissance Pictures stuff and the Sam Raimi stuff, with the exception of Cleopatra 25.
That one actually made me mad, Scott. Really,
the reason I liked it is because it didn't take itself seriously. It broke the fourth wall every once in a while.
It seemed like Xena took itself a little more
seriously. Xena took itself seriously for the first few seasons, and then they went through the whole weird pro-Christianity switch.
Didn't they actually come out of the closet at one point and admit that the characters were lesbians?
Never happened. Okay. Never happened. Xena started off taking itself seriously, and then Hercules came around and got big and took itself really goofy, and then Xena did the goofy thing, and then for some reason Xena did this switch where she became like a pro-Christian crusader, and it was her job to kill all of the old gods. Which later turned into God of War on the PlayStation.
Kratos.
Yeah, but you know, it became her job to kill off all the old gods and promote Christianity. And that's when you look at it and you're like, huh? But...
Well, and now I did see the Hercules episodes where she was a villain.
Yeah.
And when I saw those, and then I didn't see her slowly become the hero, and I didn't catch the spinoff until a few episodes in, I know it was the same character, but good God, was it not the same character,
it? Yeah, it was completely different. And the whole deal with the Sam Raimi stuff was it was good when it was fun. And they all kind of stopped being fun. And then, I don't remember what network this was on, but I remember sitting at home and for the first time in my life watching Cleopatra 2525, and then right after that was...
Jack of All Trades.
No.
Really?
Although I did like Jack of All Trades, but no.
In a lot of markets, those two were marketed together as the Action Hour, because each one was only a half-hour show. They were usually sold together.
They were flipped.
Oh, so Jack was first, and then
Cleopatra 2525. And the reason I think my local, whatever local aired it, I think the reason they flipped it was because right after Cleopatra 2525, they went into their late night stuff, and the first part of their late night stuff was that god awful VIP.
Oh, the Pam Anderson one, yes, yeah, because that was the other thing you had in that same era, all these shows that just went nowhere. VIP, Viper, She Spies,
yep,
stuff like that, and then you had other ones that, I'll admit, I never saw a single episode of when they were on first run. And then I see that they had like six seasons of like Dark Justice. And I'm going, I've seen them now, and I'm like, this is a pretty cool show.
I've never heard of it.
A judge, a sitting judge, he's sick of seeing people get off on technicality, so by day he's a judge, and by night he's a vigilante.
Okay.
And I'm like, this lasted like 5-6 seasons? What?
Yeah.
Well, and then we have to talk about the two biggest first-run syndicated ones that became two of the most popular series internationally in history.
Okay.
And one of them, I'm going to bet most of this audience has never heard of.
Okay.
First one, of course, would be Baywatch.
Yes.
Baywatch, not all first-run syndication. The first season was on NBC. That's another one like I talked about. Most people don't realize that that was on a network, NBC, and the episodes feel totally different.
Okay.
I mean, you can tell the difference between network notes and let's play up the boobies.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, but then the other one is Renegade. Do you remember Renegade?
I remember Renegade. The motorcycle riding. Yeah.
Yes. Lorenzo Lamas. Oh, God, I love Kathleen Kinmont. Oh, I've got such a thing for Kathleen Kinmont.
Okay.
Sorry. But Renegade, that lasted 5 seasons. That was rivaling Baywatch internationally.
Really?
For ratings. Renegade is still on. Reruns are still on TV in other countries.
Wow.
Renegade is insanely popular in other countries. It just here it was a success.
Mm-hmm.
But it never became like a cultural phenomenon like Baywatch did. But the Germans and the Swiss and the Turks and the South Americans, they loved Renegade. They loved Lorenzo Lamas.
Well, you know, all those Europeans are crazy.
And honestly, Renegade's not that bad. It really is not that bad.
No, I don't remember it being awful. Of course, my favorite, and I don't know if this was first-run syndication or not, but one of my favorites was Briscoe County Jr.
No, that was Fox.
Okay, so it was Fox. It was obviously earlier, but I think that...
Actually, I think that was after Jack of All Trades.
No.
I'm pretty sure he had Jack of All Trades before he was Briscoe County.
Really?
I'm not 100%, but I think.
I thought Briscoe came first.
Briscoe was late 90s. It was like 97 or something.
Really?
I thought Jack of All Trades was mid-90s, but I might be wrong.
Anyway, okay.
But
I'll have to check my DVDs. I think I still have them.
Yeah, I've got the DVD set as well. But yeah... And then there are certain shows like Briscoe that doesn't feel like a network show. It feels like a syndicated show. It really does feel like it belongs with Cleopatra and Jack in that same block. And then you also had the syndication market was full of cartoons in the 80s specifically. Thundercats, He-Man, Robotech, Defenders of the Earth, stuff like that. Those were not network tunes.
Well, most
those were on whatever time your local G.I. Joe and Transformers. Yeah, those were created.
Yep. And most of the anime that actually made it on the air here, Robotech.
A good chunk of that was first run syndicated.
Yeah.
Unless you count stuff like Gigantor and Speed Racer, those were network, but those were also earlier. Yeah. We're talking the 80s. And then in the 90s, you had that too. To a degree, you had stuff that Fox Kids kind of co-opted but wasn't made for them. Like Eek the Cat. That was made for first-run syndication, but Fox ended up buying it. So it was kind of a half and half. And, you know, Animaniacs, Tiny Toons, those were both first-run syndication. Pinky and the Brain, first-run syndication. So, you know, you also had all these cartoons. And now the first-run syndication market is just... You know, it's like an 80-year-old pussy. It's just dry and useless. Because all the shows that would be first-run syndicated now going to the cable nets. You know, Battlestar Galactica would have been a first-run syndicated show if it had been done in 1996 instead of 2006.
Got picked up by Sci-Fi.
Right. So a lot of the shows that would have been aren't anymore. You still had a few stragglers. You still had a few like Andromeda and Legend of the Seeker. That had the balls to try and go first run syndicated in the 2000s. Didn't work all that great.
Nope.
But then you also had this other little weird cast off of a reversal of that cable net thing. Second first run syndication, if that makes sense. Different than off network, it was off cable, where you had Showtime's Stargate. You had Total Recall 2070, Poltergeist, The Legacy, The Outer Limits. You had those types of shows. The Hitchhiker, First and Ten from HBO, Ray Bradbury Theater. You had those shows cut down and sold to the syndicated stations to pad out their runnings. So those are kind of, you know, you got to remember, this is still in the era of the late 90s when cable was still kind of expensive. You know, mm-hmm, people didn't all have Showtime. You could still catch The Outer Limits, a season difference, at 3 in the morning on Channel 32.
And obviously cut for content. Because
To a degree.
Good example of this is Tales from the Crypt. Because I do remember...
Oh, the Tales from the Crypts in syndication were worthless. They cut everything out of those.
Exactly.
Those were worthless. But The Outer Limits, outside of the first season, which kind of played up the, hey, we can show nudity on Showtime angle, they didn't really do all that much that needed to be cut. Same with Total Recall 2070 and Poltergeist: A Legacy. Those didn't need all that many edits. Stargate as well. Yeah. Those, you know, basically you edited out a few scenes because they were running long. Okay. You didn't have a whole lot of content edits you had to do on those. And you still got those today. Channel 32 here in Green Bay shows Stargate Universe.
Oh, yeah.
You know, in case you don't have sci-fi. And for a while, they were showing Dead Like Me.
Yep.
Dead Like Me was part of the same, I don't know why MGM put these together, but if you bought Poltergeist: A Legacy, you got Dead Like Me. I don't understand how those two shows really go together, but you had those two. But yeah, the first run syndication market is kind of dead, and in a way, I'm kind of sad about that. I really am.
It'll come back.
I don't know. You don't even really have independent networks anymore. Now they're all CW or My Network affiliates. You don't really have all that many indies anymore.
That's true. You really don't. Maybe that's why it died. It's not that the shows were bad. It's not anything like that. It's the fact that the market went away.
Yeah.
The need went away.
Well, and cable just completely ate up that market.
There you go.
Like I said, all the shows that would have been probably a big hit in first run syndication would have gone bye-bye. Because see, here was the great deal that TV stations loved about first run syndication.
What is that?
The market shares. Basically, you were given the show, like Next Generation. They gave you the show. You don't have to pay for this at all. Now, there are 14 minutes of ads in here. We own 7 minutes where we're going to advertise whatever we want in our advertisers, and you have 7 minutes to put in whatever you want.
Ah, okay.
And so basically, the shows were pure profit for both Paramount and for the station.
So here's a crap load of eyeballs, yeah.
Yeah, because the station didn't have to pay anything for that show, and they've got 7 minutes of local ads to sell. The only thing that they're risking is that no one watches the show and those ads go to waste.
Right.
And, you know, we could have put something we knew was going to get better ratings
right. In
that spot.
Right.
That's the only risk. That's why TV stations loved the first run syndicated. They were either just given to you or they were really cheap. Or you basically didn't have to pay anything and it was all rev share.
Cool.
And that you don't get on cable anymore.
No, you don't.
So that's something that the local affiliates really miss is not getting that stuff any longer. So that's just what I got to say about that. I just was mad at the mental floss thing about giving Star Trek all the credit for the first run syndication boom. I'm like, yeah, no, you're completely discounting Dark Side and Next Step Beyond and, you know, all the things that came before that.
Yeah, but again, I think that they may not be responsible for, you know, it's like an airport. The airport is responsible for the runway. They're not responsible for the planes that actually move the people, that bring them to the airport. And I think...
But the way I look at it, Next Gen wouldn't have been able to do what it did if Darkseid hadn't plowed the road for him first.
Yeah, but Next Gen had the eyeballs. They've got the nostalgia. They've got the cultural impact. You got to give them that.
I know, but I'm just saying, Darkseid shouldn't be discounted. And yet it is too often.
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
What do you want to say in our last minute 15?
We've got these links on 1201beyond.com.
We do.
And
Amazon links.
And basically you go there, you shop like you normally would at Amazon, and everybody shops at Amazon, so why the hell not?
Yep.
And we get a little cut of what you spend. And
it costs you nothing.
You know, you don't get a deal, but you do get a warm and fuzzy feeling that if you spend $5.99 on a DVD, we get about 3 cents of it.
And there's the fact that you can also go to adamandeve.com and use the promo code STATIC. We are such whores.
We really are.
Well, maybe because we need money really bad.
We really do.
This is not out of greed. This is out of, I don't want to lose my house. There's a difference.
This is the time of year when my work dies. November and December, just nothing.
Yeah, so this isn't going, hey, I need another solid go back scratcher. Yeah, because we're so...
You know, no, this is a matter of I need carrots. I like carrots.
Good night.
Good night, everybody. Thanks a lot for joining us. And we will see you all next week.